What we've got here is failure to communicate.
This is Remember That Film, the show which covers a look back on memories, nostalgia, and behind-the-scenes facts that you may not have known about your favourite films.
At the time, in 1997, it was quite divisive if The Fifth Element was a great film. People say it was so bad back then that it's so good now. Like Mr. Shadow itself, The Fifth Element was something of an anomaly. When it hit theatres in 1997, a $90 million sci-fi spectacular that wasn't based on a pre-existing property. While that's technically true, there were some French comic book publishers who felt like Luc Besson's film crossed the lines between homage and outright theft. We determine if there's any merit to those claims, see how well the movie holds up over two decades later, and examine the reasons why there may never have been a sequel and may never well be.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Remember That Film, and the third week going in the show already. And this week we're going back to 1997 and The Fifth Element, and I've got with me Jacqueline Underwood, always known as the Jack and M Drive Show.
Hello.
And also on Brekkie every now and then, and even nighttime shows recently as well.
Doing it all.
Yeah, how are you going? Thanks for coming in this afternoon.
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
That's good. And this is you know, sci-fi, there's lots of classics and sci-fi films like, you know, Blade Runner, all Star Wars and all the big ones. But The Fifth Element is one of those one-of-a-kind, unique movies that came out in the middle of the 90s. How about you tell us about the first time you watched Fifth Element? Was it Fifth Element, not Elephant?
Yeah.
Was it at the movies or VHS or?
So 1997, I was 10 years old when this movie came out, and I believe I saw it was a VHS. Yeah, at home.
Yeah.
With the family in the lounge room, you know, around the one TV set. That was the first time I saw it. Sci-fi is my favourite genre of films. But this one really, I think with everyone, it really struck a chord. I just remember, you know, those futuristic car scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the scene where she falls into the cab, Lilu, you know, the fifth element. So when she falls into the cab, and just the costumes and everything like that really struck me. I remember it stood out, and maybe I've watched it 20 times since then.
Wow, 20 times. I've only seen it three and recently only on the weekend just to this show. So the first time I watched it was on VHS. Dad used to always get me lots of R-rated films as a younger. So it would have been about 97 of 15.
Yeah.
15.
Okay.
But I think he wasn't really big on some sci-fi films because he had problems with understanding some of those stuff. So I think this is the one I watched on my own in the kitchen on a little TV on VHS, and I really enjoyed it. Then I watched it again on DVD probably about 10 years ago and then the Blu-ray version for the first time last weekend. What I found interesting, though, was how was this movie only PG? Some of the suggestive sexual references in some scenes and some of the costumes.
So Jean-Paul Gaultier designed all those costumes, thousands of them. And sometimes when designers, you know, design for films, they just send the clothes. But he was actually on the set and fixing up things and the whole way through production. So some of those costumes are quite risque. I mean, Lilu, when she drops out from the sky, she's just wearing a white bandage.
Yeah.
And then there's that scene as well where she takes off her clothes and the priest.
They all turn around.
They turn around. They're a bit embarrassed. And then they say they really did make her perfect, didn't they?
Mila Jovovich. There's so many pronunciations with that name because she was basically a no-no name. She was in Dazed and Confused very younger, about 5 years before that. And then people really come to know who she was with The Fifth Element when she hardly had a word of English. And it wasn't until the Resident Evil movies in about the late 90s that people really started to take notice of her as well.
Yeah. She had to carve out her name as sort of an action star, which she has done now, but it took her a long time, I believe, to sort of get people to take her seriously in that, you know, action role.
We might go to we've got the entire soundtrack. It's actually 26 tracks. Eric Serra did the score music for and a lot of it had that little Latin beats. It was very, very different, I thought, the score music. Unlike, you know, John Williams has that melody of what you remember with all his stuff, but this was more of that asthmatic ones.
Yeah.
But we'll go to one of my favourite scenes in the film is the diva dance because it starts off with the opera singing and then it kicks into the beats.
Now, interestingly, is that Luke Besson's wife that sings that scene?
Yes.
And he left her after the film for Miller.
Oh, I did not know that.
They got married and they were together for 2 years and then they got divorced.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. That's interesting.
Oh, we're going to go to that track now.
Oh, What movies were released on the week and year that it was at the box office.
And we're going back to 1997, and it was the week of May the 9th, so autumn time, starting to get very, very cold. I was doing my school certificate, actually, in 1997.
Not studying, just watching films.
Just watching films.
That's the way.
Now, it's interesting. So I've got the top 23 films of what came out that weekend, and we'll go down the list. Take Town, I don't think I've ever seen that one. That was at number 23. We had Nowhere. Then we had some interesting ones. Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. Oh. And because in 1997, George Lucas re-released his own edited, he did all the changes for all three of those movies. And they got re-released in the cinemas because the only version you get of the original Star Wars trilogy is the VHS versions.
Okay.
But now, anything that comes on DVD or Blu-ray, and he's still changing it now with Disney Plus, some of the scenes out of Star Wars. But yeah, Empire Strikes Back was coming in at 21 in the box office. We had Hollow Reed in there as well. Return of the Jedi came in there. The Eighth Day, I might have seen that once. It just doesn't ring much of a bell with that one. Warriors of Virtue, so there's some stuff here that hasn't really aged that well. Murder at 1600 at number 11.
Wow.
We get to the top 10 now, The Saint. Here's a pretty awful one. At number 9, Anaconda.
Okay, yeah.
That was J-Lo, a very young J-Lo. Then we have Ronnie and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Oh, I loved that film.
I forgot about that one.
That is a classic.
Jerry Maguire, that was a classic. Show Me the Money, you know, Tom Cruise. And we had Renee Zellweger, who won the Oscar that year. Oh, we had Liar Liar at number 6. That was a Jim Carrey film. Very funny film. Volcano at number 5. That was a Tommy Lee Jones film about the same time. Disaster films were sort of making a comeback in 97. Austin Powers and The International Man of Mystery at number 4. Breakdown at number 3, I think that was a Kurt Russell film I may have seen once during that year. Number 2, would you believe, was Father's Day. One of the main reasons that is because Father's Day is in May.
Okay.
Well, Mother's Day is for us, but
in the
United I think Father's Day goes into June-ish, doesn't it? About the first week of June. And at number one, we have The Fifth Element.
Fantastic.
Yeah, which grossed $17 million. And Father's Day, which is number two, was only $8 million, so it actually made more that week, double the amount of what was number two that weekend in the box office.
Yeah, for good reason.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll be back with more soon. We're going to go to some more score music from Eric Serra. How about we go with the Corden Dallas theme and Bruce Willis, his theme.
Fantastic. Let's now get behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes to find out a bit of trivia or a bit of stuff that happened behind the sets that you may not have known. I'm sure you probably know the majority of this stuff. You've already named a few things that had happened.
I'm sure there's more for me to learn. So,
at the time, it was the most expensive movie ever produced outside of Hollywood. Most expensive production in history. It was, and at $80 million, the visual effects budget of the movie was the highest of its time.
Now, I read something interesting. Luc Besson, the director, he started writing this film when he was 16 and then couldn't find the backers to get it together and couldn't get the money together to make it when he wanted to, and then he went on and produced another movie, Leon the Professional?
Yeah, that's the one. Natalie Portman is the young girl in it.
Yeah.
Oh, Gary Oldman, of course, was the villain in that as well. Yes. Yeah. So he must have been a big fan of Gary Oldman, who, by the way, is absolutely unbelievable. In any character he plays, he just plays something different.
Yeah.
And he's great at being a bad guy.
Yeah.
The Stones. Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. So, I mean, that movie and then the success of that then gave him the money to go ahead and make this one. But I read somewhere that he's very frustrated that the special effects and everything in the film were so hard to capture, and it took hours to get the one shot, and they were working with blue screens, and it was literally, I think, a year before the whole green screen technology came in, and he was a bit frustrated that maybe if he just waited a little bit longer, the film would have been easier for him to make.
The George Lucas-ness. It's funny, you know, because Dune, another sci-fi film, came out there. That was a David Lynch. Now, he has a tendency of making very weird films. And Dune's being remade. That's actually coming out this year, which will be interesting. And a lot of people compare Dune to Fifth Element.
Okay, yeah.
And that sort of, going back to nostalgia and its cult following now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting.
The explosion in the main hall was the largest indoor explosion ever filmed, speaking of special effects. The resulting fire almost went beyond control. It took 25 minutes to put it out. That's funny, I was thinking about that last night too.
What fun. Yeah.
Luc Besson demanded that most of the action shots in the movie take place in broad daylight, as he was reportedly tired of the dark spaceship corridor and dimly lit planets common in science fiction movies and wanted a brighter, cheerfully crazy look as opposed to a gloomy, realistic one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, captured that really well.
Mm. The divine language spoken by Lilu, if that's how she's pronounced, was invented by co-writer and director himself, Luc Besson, and further refined by Mila Jovovich, who had little trouble learning and developing it, as she was already fluent and through languages. The languages had only 400 words. He and Mila held conversations and wrote letters to each other in the language as practice. By the end of the filming, they were able to have full conversations in this language.
Wow.
It's interesting because I think I also saw on behind the scenes that the reaction to Bruce Willis is real during the take in the cab. He had no idea what she was saying.
Oh, of course.
So he was, what the hell?
Yeah. And I read, just going back to the costumes, I read that some of the actors weren't shown the costumes or what the characters would look like until the actual take. So that look of surprisement and bewilderment on their face is real.
Yeah, which is great. You can't get that moment back. It's like an Alien, you know, film. The reaction of Veronica Cartwright of the blood squirting was not expected. When composer Eric Serra showed soprano Inva Mula, who dubs the voice of the diva, who we were speaking about before, the sheet music for the diva dance, she reportedly smiled and relayed to him that some of the notes written were not humanly possible to achieve because the human voice cannot change notes that fast. Hence, she performed the notes in isolation, one by one, as opposed to consecutively singing them all together. And they digitized the notes to fit the music. So we heard that a bit earlier. There are a few moments when you can hear the difference in the vocal tones of the diva's voice. As I said before, I love how that cuts in halfway through. But I got to say one thing about The Fifth Element, and that's Chris Tucker.
Okay. That doesn't do it
I think he really just irritated me after watching it recently, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Luke Perry at the start.
Oh, yeah, the late group, Luke Perry,
He's got quite a small role. But I'm interested to know, was that pre-90210 or post?
What happened was he left 90210 in the mid-90s to pursue his movie career. And then I think he came back to 90210 at the O when his movie career sort of failed. And then he went back to TV again with Riverdale recently. The late Luke Perry, you know, passed away last year. It's sad saying that because how young he looks there too. The James Dean look, you know.
Yeah.
When filming began, the production decided to dye Mila Jovovich's hair from its natural brown colour to her character's signature orange colour. However, due to the fact that her hair had to be re-dyed regularly to maintain the bright colour, Mila's hair quickly became too damaged and broken to withstand the dye. Eventually, a wig was created to match the colour and style of Lilu's hair and were used for the remainder of the production.
What a nightmare.
I didn't actually know that, yeah.
Yeah. And in the 90s, they didn't have all the technology. They've got great hair conditioners now.
They can de-age people. Yeah. Bruce Willis ad-libbed the line, "Look, lady, I only speak two languages, English and bad English."
Yeah.
That's just the typical Bruce Willis smart-ass, you know, back to moonlighting days before Die Hard made him famous. Luc Besson said that casting Bruce Willis was the easiest part of the movie. I came across in New York City. He read the script. 2 hours later, he said he'll do it.
Amazing.
How easy is that? Nick Dudman's creature crew created a group of spindly, long-nosed alien garage collectors that never made it into the final movie. In the scenes at the spaceport, there's a huge pile of garbage which has gone uncollected because the garbage collectors are on strike, as explained in some dialogue. These creatures would have been seen in the garbage holding sandwich boards, signs reading, "Oh, strike," if they had made it to the final cut. It's probably on the deleted scene footages on the DVD.
Yes.
In the movie, the Malwin, is that Malwin?
That's as good a guess.
Malwin is actually lip-syncing to soprano Inva Mula. She practiced 30 times a day for 3 months to get the song right.
Wow.
That's a lot of practice. A lot of showers. Mila was covered in bruises throughout the entire shoot, according to Luc Besson. Even Bruce Willis said to her, "Come on, it's fake. Don't break your head over it." The animatronic mechanisms used for the Mangalore mask were later recycled for Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Now that I come to think of it.
Yeah.
If you closely look when Ruby Rod sings All Night Long, Chris Tucker, Bruce Willis can be seen trying not to laugh.
Yeah.
I have noticed that in the background. Well, he just points the the microphone to Bruce Willis. Yeah. Oh, hello. Yeah. Bruce Willis, Mila Jovovich, and Chris Tucker, and also Gary Oldman, were all left-handed. There's our useless fact for the day.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Very rare thing, you know, all the big stars.
Yeah, I read somewhere that Luc Besson wanted to cast Julia Roberts in Miller's role.
Ah, yeah, I got a bit more about that too. Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
In the taxi scene after Lilu has crashed through the roof, the police show up, which the taxi closer to the police car, that doesn't make sense, before and after the taxi has the winch cable attached. The police officer speaking on a bullhorn can be seen mouthing the words, "Thank you for your help." In post-production, it was redubbed to "Thank you for your cooperation." This is a reference to RoboCop back in 1987. If you notice, the helmets worn by the police officers slightly resemble the helmets worn by RoboCop, hence the redubbing. Also interesting, the mother's voice, who I can't find anywhere in the credits.
Yeah.
There's been rumours that Demi Moore may have been the voice, because watching again the other night, I thought, I recognise that voice.
Yeah.
It was driving me crazy.
Yeah, I only just watched this again this morning, and that was, it did ring a bell. And they were married, no?
They were married, Bruce.
So Willis. That would be easy.
Yeah.
Just call up the wife.
I reckon that might have, that was the rumours. Yeah, it's so distinctive, that voice. Yeah, and the mother too. Yeah, on the phone.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
We never see her. And, you know, little things like that little refrigerator, those little things they must have come up with. Imagine being in a little loft that small where you can just push your bed into the wall, or your freezer up, or your shower.
Thought
of back in the 90s.
But also it had this quality of home, like the microwave and every like we can all, you know, relate with that, and the appliances and the cat.
The cat, yeah.
You know, that's all very normal and homely, and then, you know, there's this other side where there's restaurants that come to your window and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, one commercial restaurant who we all know has a big scene in that. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, through the drive-thru.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, so Kevin Costner was considered for the role of General Munro.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think Kevin Costner's a bit boring maybe for that role.
Mm.
Mel Gibson was considered for the role of Corbin Dallas.
Yes. Now, he would have done well as well, I think.
Yeah, he was really younger at the time. Yeah. I think he went on to do Lethal Weapon 4 instead.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. And you mentioned before, Julia Roberts was considered for the role also of Lilu. Despite the movie's success and positive reviews from critics, Luc Besson decided not to make a sequel or expand the Fifth Element universe by making the movie the first of a cinematic universe and pursued other interests.
Good call. I think a good movie can be ruined with a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And back then in the 80s, 90s, sequels weren't that good. So much now today. And now, you know what? I'll probably just reboot it now as well.
Yeah.
What'll happen?
Yeah, it's probably 10 years away.
And CGI it to death. We mentioned Luke Perry before. Despite being credited as the sixth, he is the sixth credit on that thing. Mm. He says less than 100 words.
Yeah. It's a very small role.
Yeah, I noticed that too in the credits at the start. Oh, and Luke Perry, I thought he only in it for like the first 5 minutes, which took place in 1914, the opening scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we moved on to 2,000 years later, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where she's going through all the history,
It's unsure. And there's a few things with the plot line that, I mean, if you take it too seriously and you want to find out exactly what's going on, you just miss the whole movie. You've got to take it all with a grain of salt and just sort of watch the movie rather than letting it make sense, because it doesn't. It's some parts that are not.
And
really,
that's what you got to do with sci-fi. You've just got to switch your brain off and not try to analyze too much. And I think that's some of the problems with the new Star Wars. People are too much analysing, looking for silly plot holes, and it's just become, you know, social media, online and all this. People are just looking for things to be wrong.
Well,
they just enjoy what you're watching.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. After working on the movie Lenny McLean, the police chief appeared in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. It's the British film. Quite funny too. Which was his final acting role. He died on July the 28th, 1998 at the age of 49. The movie was the acting debut of Jason Statham, who starred in The Transporter as Frank Martin, which was also written by Luc Besson.
Now, Luc Besson also works with the Eric, the music composer.
Eric Serra.
So they do a lot of films together.
Yeah.
Apparently they're a little collaboration and that's how they do it, interestingly. So there you go.
I'll have to try and find the Spanish track for us to play a bit later too, car chase scene.
Oh,
yeah,
so good.
It reminds me of We Speak No Americano that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, of course.
And we're going to get a couple more here to get through. So the number 5 appears in the movie on several occasions. This is another one of those useless facts, like the left-handed thing. There are 5 elements. Corbin Dallas, license, had 5 points left. Uh-huh. Zorg stops his bomb with 5 seconds remaining on the timer. And Mangalore's bomb starts with at the same 5-second timer. Ruby Rod, near the end of the movie, after the alien planet has stopped, says there's a bomb going off every 5 minutes. And the doctor at the end says that Lilu and Corbin need 5 more minutes. Yeah, that great scene at the end. Ruby, show starts at 5 o'clock.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very clever.
Yeah, very good Easter eggs there. Put in there. In the final scene, a scientist says 1 minute, referring to the length of time before Mr. Shadow enters Earth's atmosphere. It actually takes 1 minute and 49 seconds from the moment until the fifth element engages and stops him.
Oh, there you
That's
go.
Our last one today.
Fantastic.
That's been behind the scenes. We might have a bit more Eric Serra score music now. You're on 2MCA Remember That Film with Adam and Jack.
Will lead us through the
Here on Remember That Film on 2MCE, the credits run at the main title, Little Light of Love. And we're coming to a close now of our Fifth Element segment, and we'll have to get you on again for you're a sci-fi.
I'm a sci-fi
fan, so we'll have to get some more.
Yeah,
you on again?
Yeah, I just don't know what I would choose because there's a lot of movies out there. I mean, Blade Runner's an obvious one.
Yeah.
Mad Max Fury Road, that was pretty cool.
That was a reboot done well.
Yeah. Interstellar, there's a few that are...
Inception, speaking of Christopher Nolan films, yeah.
But none have that quality that The Fifth Element has for me.
Yeah.
I think it's that balance of organic and it's not, I wouldn't call it steampunk, although the aliens when they come down at the start... They are sort of steampunk with their iron. You know, it's a little bit like that. But I don't know. It's just got this raw quality. And I think it was made before all that CGI and everything came in.
Yeah, it's very unique.
Yeah.
And I think it was ahead of its time,
way ahead of its time. Because I was watching even this morning and some of the costumes, I mean, they're still relevant and cool.
Yeah.
you could see people wearing them at the club on a Saturday night. You know, in some of the scenes, there's the costumes are really, well done. So, it's timeless, I think.
And, we mentioned before briefly about a sequel's never been made. There's been talk of perhaps, thought about it. Bruce Willis is way too old now. We're talking 23 years later now. Oh, that's scary when I say that, 23 years later.
Yeah, I know.
When you said you were 10.
I know.
You know? When someone says 90s music, that was two decades ago now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's scary, isn't it? Time just goes so quickly. But who would play Dallas now and who would play Miller? Like, it's I just don't know. They did such a great job in the cast.
Miller could still play herself now. She still looks pretty good for her age. Bruce Willis, though, is starting to get up there.
Yeah, who would play him? I'm not sure. And I like, just to go off point again, Bruce Willis, I like his character in this film, that he's surly, he's grumpy. He plays that grumpy.
Yeah, he does it well,
He does that so well. But then there's the little love story as well that sort of, Miller's, the soft character is breaking down his sort of hard, grumpy shell.
One of the funny, scenes. Yeah. You should have asked for permission. What's that translated?
He said,
oh, I knew that.
Yeah. So it's got a great quality to it, great film. And, you should go watch it, everyone. Go watch it again.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll see something new.
Definitely, because I hadn't watched it in probably a decade and I enjoyed it on the weekend watching that again.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in again. As I said, we'll have to have you on again
for your next
choice.
I'll
and
have to think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see you later.
Yeah, thanks.
Did you?
And in the short time that we have left, we're going to go over some little bits of news that's been going on in the movie world and TV world as well. And just for me to comment on these little parts of a bit of news that has been going through in the time that we have left. Now, the Doolittle movie are positioned to lose more money than Cats. Now, that's saying something because Cats has been, reviews have been an absolute disaster so far. The CGI Cats, nothing has been going well there in reviews. And the Doolittle movie, you know, that's been done so many times. You know, the Talk to the Animals Day. And then we had the Eddie Murphy Doolittle, which was half decent. But now we've got the Robert Downey Jr. one, and I think the problem is people will keep remembering him as Tony Stark rather than having new roles and all that. That's been an absolute disaster so far, only sitting at about 15% on Rotten Tomatoes last I checked, and I think they lost about $100 million. Other news, Patrick Stewart and Kevin Feige have met and about joining the MCU. We'll see what happens there. Patrick Stewart, you know, he's 80-odd years old now. I don't think much will be happening there. The X-Men isn't quite part of the MCU, so we'll have to see where that's at. Joaquin Phoenix credits Heath Ledger for his SAG Best Actor win. Well, his Joker is a lot different to the Heath Ledger one, but I think that was more of, as he quoted, you know, standing on Heath Ledger's shoulders. So I think that was a bit of a nod there to Heath Ledger, the great Heath Ledger. You know, he passed away in January, it would have been back in 2008, so 12 years ago it was basically from this week since we lost Heath Ledger. Can you believe it's been 12 years? All the talk about the controversy with the Oscars, with no female directors being nominated. A bit of a tough topic going on right now that there's been talk that why not have female directors and male directors like you do with actors. There can be arguments against that. I can see why it's good so that females get more recognised. The problem is with acting, if you're going for a male role, you have to be a male for that role. Vice versa, if you're a female, with directing, a male or female are interchangeable, so they could direct any movie. A male or female could direct a war movie or a romance film, where when you're talking about male and female actors, they aren't interchangeable. You've got to be a male or female for that part. So I think that's where the disadvantage is there, and that's why you don't have best female makeup artist or best female animated short. That's why it's all set there for director. So I think that isn't going to change, just like they thought best popular movie. Let's talk about Spider-Man 3 because Sony did a deal. The new shooting location will be in Iceland. So that's raised eyebrows to see who the next villain could be in the third Spider-Man film. But it's good to see that they made a deal there. And just recently, you know, Terry Jones from Monty Python, he passed away sadly. Today, so that's a bit of sad news. Oh, yesterday, sorry. Netflix CEO insists they will never be ad-supported, so he won't end up with people like Foxtel with ads going through a lot of the stuff now, so that is hopefully some good news there. There's been a Clone Wars final season trailer out as well, if you're a fan of the Star Wars series, and Agent Smith won't be appearing in The Matrix 4. Dwayne Johnson and Ryan Reynolds' film Red Notice starts shooting. So yeah, that'll be interesting. Two big action stars at the moment are right in the prime of their careers, just like Arnie and Stallone once were in the 80s. And The Witcher's Netflix's biggest premiere season ever. There's been talk about that, and I'm a big Witcher fan. I love the video games, and the books are really good, some of the lore behind that. And the first season, all 8 episodes, were awesome. But saying it is the highest ever, how do streaming services actually count their numbers? If I sit there and I watch 5 minutes of a movie and I hate it and I turn it off, does that mean I watch that film? Does it count towards their numbers? Or do I have to watch it all the way to the end? So there's a bit of conjecture there about what that could be. And opening this weekend at the movies worldwide, The Gentleman, which is a Guy Ritchie film, directed film. Guy Ritchie, of course, he did classics like Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. great British, well, a bit of crime, a bit of drama, and this one looks like it's going that way as well. And it has The Turning also opening this week, which is a horror film, so both on the schedules there as new releases this week. That's been the news, and that has been Remember That Film. Thanks again for Jacqueline Underwood for being with us to talk about The Fifth Element throughout the show. And she'll be on her show Drive again on Wednesday next week with her co-host M. So that'll be a good one at 4 o'clock on Wednesday to listen to. Next week, well, enjoy the long weekend coming up too, because Australia Day is Sunday, and of course we have a public holiday on Monday for Sunday as well. So enjoy the long weekend, everyone. And I'll be back next Friday, and I think next week we're going to go with this one. Just a little bit of a teaser for next week. Bye.
I know what you're thinking, punk. You're thinking, did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Now, to tell you the truth, I forgot myself in all this excitement. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and will blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.